Jake, welcome back to the show.
Pleasure.
One of the biggest shows we've ever done.
It's huge.
Live.
I mean, gargantuan.
Right now.
I forget what it's about, though. Could you possibly remind me?
I can do that. Little book, you know, that set the Kickstarter world on fire recently. Volume 2 just wrapped up, made a ton of cash, because people are interested in it, you know? I call it Remind. Gorgeous book. Absolutely gorgeous. It finally hit our app. Volume 1 is available. Volume 2 should be dropping as this episode drops. We have the creator on the line, Jason Brubaker. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Can I call you Jay Brubes? Is that okay if I call you Jay Brubes?
You sure can. That's okay. Great. Reminds me of high school.
Jay Brubes.
Speaking of high school, how about that picture at the end of Volume 1 where you had that big afro? What happened to that hair?
Yeah, where is that afro?
That was shortly after high school.
Oh, okay.
Right after I moved out here to Los Angeles. And I took, that's kind of like I guess it was several years after high school, but it was when I first started working on like the animated version. It was about 15, 16 years ago.
Man.
So
ancient.
I'm finally done.
Wow. Oof.
Rest in peace, that hair.
Seriously. Yeah. Did you donate it to like Locks for Kids?
It was, you know, inspired by the surfing roommates that I had at the time. So
isn't afro not good for surfing? Like not aerodynamic and would get like make it's you like weighted down.
Well, I would never go that fast. So,
so Remind Volume 2 available. What is the book? What's your pitch to folks that have never read it before or haven't heard of it?
The pitch. Well, first of all, disclosure: I am horrible at pitching. But here we go. I say it's a mystical sci-fi about faith and brain transplantation. Mm-hmm. It's basically a lizard that had his brain transplanted into a cat's body, and he's trying to reclaim some of his old life and figure out what happened to him. So it's a two-volume story. That the full story arc is in two volumes, and it ends with, I guess I can't say how it ends.
No, you can't.
So there you go.
Don't spoil it.
If you could put your brain in a cat's body, would you do it? What if it was that cat? What if it was Tartar Sauce the cat? Would you do that?
I think you ask everybody that question. I feel like "Would you do it?" is like your go-to question.
Well, it's like brain transplant. Would you put your brain anywhere? I think we did Robot Body the other week.
I think we did. So, but what's cool about Remind? When Volume 1 came out, you did like this really interesting marketing where you put your work up week after week. So as you were progressing later in the book, you were putting up early pages on your website on the Remind blog. Had you seen that done elsewhere before, or was that just your way of, I need to get the word out somehow?
It was more like, if I spend $11,000 to publish this thing, I need to make sure I have an audience to sell it to. Because I had tried to publish little comics on the side and just going straight to conventions. And I realized shortly after starting, it was so hard to sell to an audience that, you know, for the first time trying to convince them in person. And so I noticed a lot of web comics and blogging people who would, you know, just get these giant audiences by putting stuff online. And it weirded me out at first because I thought I'd be giving away everything and no one would buy it. But it turned out to be the opposite. The more you give away for free, the more people who, you know, you tap into a bigger audience. And so in turn, if 1% of that audience wants to be a hardcore collector, you know, at least you showed it to that many people to decide if they want to be a collector. So it worked out real well. And the second Kickstarter ended up being hugely successful. I had no idea it would be that big. So I'm continuing to do that with the second volume, continuing to put it online. So I love that strategy. It's been working great.
Why do you think your Kickstarters were so successful? What do you think differentiated you from some that never really, you know, go past their own limit? Maybe they just get to 3,000 and maybe just stop.
Well, there's a lot of ideas that I have. I think, first of all, I think clarity is super important. And there's a lot of Kickstarters out there that just aren't very clear on what it is that they're offering and what their finished product will be and what you'll get out of it. And so that's one big thing. And I also have worked in commercial advertising for a long time. And so I realize a lot of, you know, just ways to just dumb your pitch down as simple as it can be and so that you answer all the questions. And I had re-edited my video from the ground up twice because I did a video and then I showed it to friends and they're like, oh, this is bad. This is bad. This doesn't say this, this, you know, so I just redid it. And so it was, there was a lot of care put into how I present it to people for the first time on Kickstarter.
How far into volume two, like how much of it was completed when you started the Kickstarter campaign?
I had everything sketched out all the way. And the first, let's see, there was five chapters in it. I had about four out of the five chapters finished at that time, I believe. And the final chapter was all in thumbnail mode. And I figured, you know, if I could get this Kickstarter funded, I would know kind of how hard to push at a deadline, and it would motivate me to get it done faster. And then, you know, I also had real crazy printer deadlines because I need to print it in China to make it affordable for me. And so you have to really work around like Chinese New Year and all these weird shipping schedules that happen. So I'm just barely making it in time. We're just locking down the shipping times right now, and it's getting bound right now as we speak, apparently.
What do you think about, like, there's a lot of, I remember your first one, Kickstarter, was before the big Kickstarter craze where like everyone was doing Kickstarter, and now I'm seeing a lot of comic projects where there's literally no work done and they ask for like, you know, 70 grand right off the bat. What do you think about those?
Well, I think that's another thing that people do wrong with it. I mean, it's not wrong. I think the people who can do that are people who already have a very established name. Like, you know, if Todd McFarlane came in and said, I'm going to do a book, you know, for whatever reason.
He doesn't need any more money.
You know, he doesn't need to prove that he can do a book and it's going to be a certain quality. So he knows how to do it, you know. And it worked great with, like, Double Fine, the video game company that first made a million or something. Mm-hmm. You know,
it was
so,
like 2 million, actually.
So if you have that, if you have the name and the fan base backing you, then you can do that. But a lot of people who don't have that try to take that approach, and it just, I don't think it will work at all, because you really have to prove yourself. You know, you either have to prove yourself or have your work done so that can prove it for you.
It's like some of them that I see, people ask for like 40 or 50 grand, and there's, you know, and then it, you know, if I meet this goal, then I can start work on it. It's weird hearing someone, like, some people view it as a negative, like it's paying their salary essentially, like I'm backing this so I can pay you to do this book.
Yeah, and what people don't understand is, like, the 107,000 I raised on there, it's pretty much all gone on printing, promoting, paying, you know, designers, shipping, you know, taxes. It's pretty much used up for production of the book. I saved, you know, I tell everybody, I saved 10%. I've saved about 10,000 out of that, and I'm locking it away so no one can touch it, you know. But other than that, it's all gone. And so for people to think, well, if I make 100,000, I could live off this for a year, you know, it's going to be really hard. And then you still have to deliver something after you finish it. Mm-hmm. And so how are you going to pay for that, you know? So it's a tricky situation if you go about it that way, I think.
In the addendum to volume one, you had mentioned that, you know, this was originally envisioned as an animated piece, and you even had like a 10-minute reel produced where you were kind of showing it around, and it got you your first kind of, I guess, big job. And then at later, you were kind of bummed when someone recommended that you should do it as a comic book. How did the process change your mind on that whole change?
Well, my mind was changed because I worked on that animation for like 7 years, and I just remember, you know, every time I'd work on it, I'd want to redo it again and again, and it would just, and I only had like 5-10 minutes done, that, and only like 30 seconds that I liked. And what I realized is, man, I could be doing this for the rest of my life and barely get my first movie done, you know? And it was hard to pitch, you know. I tried to pitch it at studios and try to get a, you know, TV show or something, just because I had put so much time into it. And finally, when someone suggested that, it kind of made a lot of sense eventually. The more I thought about it, it's like I could just get these stories done in the form of graphic novels, and they'll actually get done in my lifetime. You know, I could actually do a series of, you know, 10 stories instead of just one long animation that takes me my entire life, and I'm bitter at the end. You know,
And you worked, you're the one of the movies that you mentioned that you worked on was, at that point, I think was Kung Fu Panda 2 that you were, you did some work on. What's the process like on those movies? How long is like the development for a large movie like that? Like how far in advance were you working on it in, you know, relation to its release date?
Years. Well, with Kung Fu Panda 2, I think I worked on it for about 2 years. Maybe it was approaching 3 years. And that movie is already, it's kind of already designed because, you know, Kung Fu Panda 1 was already figured out. And so the whole world was already designed how it looks and, you know, stuff didn't need to be figured out from the ground up. The first one, I don't know exactly how long it took, but I think it was like 5-6 years that they were working on it. And it went through a lot of changes and iterations and before it turned into what it was now. I had worked on the first one as well. I worked on the animation of the opening sequence of the first one. And the second one, I also worked on the animation of the opening. And I designed a lot of the shadow puppet stuff in the opening of the first one as well as throughout the whole movie. So
is that job still as rewarding and as dream jobish as you originally when you first got it? Is it still grown in different areas for you?
I never had that as my goal, which is kind of odd to say because I never thought I could get it. And so I just would always tried to start my own studio and stuff. But then through that, you know, I was given that job. And so I always looked at that job as like, okay, well, this is a good training ground for when I do my own studio now. And so I always go into work thinking like, this is amazing what I can get out of this job, like knowledge from all these other artists around me and stuff. So in that way, it's always exciting, you know. I always battle with like working on stuff for money versus working on what I really want to work on. You know, so it's always that balance. It just so happens also though that I feel like I'm always on good projects there. Like the Kung Fu Panda series is just I really enjoy working on it. So you know, there are other properties
right.
I won't name, but things I'm not as excited about. So it'd be harder to work on it. You know.
If let's say you start your own studio and then you eventually make your dream animation project for this book, would it be in 2D or would it be in like 3D, like Tintin or Kung Fu Panda?
I love the 2D stuff. So I think it'd be that. But at this point in my life, I think when it comes to starting my own company, it's kind of more or less Coffee Table Comics, which is what I published Remind through. And just trying to continue to publish graphic novels and then, you know, eventually selling the rights to studios to make movies and then just let them do it the way they want. Because, I don't know. I'm kind of over that whole thing of trying to be a director, trying to be a, you know, make movies type stuff because I just see how much work is involved and you just need a massive team and it's just a different thing than I think what I really want out of my life as an artist. So
it was I remember every time I think about directing a movie, I remember Peter Jackson doing those like webisodes for filming King Kong, and he started and like during the filming he lost like 200 pounds and looked like he was about to die.
Yeah,
in all those like video clips, it was the weirdest thing ever. And I think Superman Returns was being filmed at the same time, and I remember Bryan Singer visited the set and to like film, like I guess Peter Jackson was like suffering from exhaustion or like sleep deprivation, so like he invited directors over to just direct for a day or two, and Singer and Jackson were in frame like during this interview, and Peter Jackson literally fell asleep during the interview, and Bryan Singer just like, okay, I think I'm gonna go direct this scene now. And Peter Jackson was just like asleep in the clip. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, the good directors, man, they put everything into it. I mean, it's just like it is their consuming life, and we're talking, you know, longer hours than I can afford. I would ever want to think about one thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I just don't feel like I have that desire to be that all consuming with movies anymore.
What was the what was the last good 2D animated movie that came out?
Last good 2D animated movie?
It was something really recent. I remember seeing something in
this,
that.
What's the one that was really oddly done, but it was good? Was it The Secret of Kells, or is that
Secret of Kells was great, yeah.
That had a really weird style where the camera, it felt like the camera never moved. Like, everything was happening in front of the camera, and that was it.
But the perspective was kind of sucked out of the art. And
yeah.
That was a real neat design sense that they used.
In your free time, what do you find yourself reading?
Well, I read a lot of books.
Right.
As far as comics, like the last couple I got Kazuo Kibuishi's Kickstarter book, which is Daisy Cutter. The last graphic novel before that I read was Doug Tenapel's Cardboard.
Wow.
So I'm into the kind of long format, like full complete story arc type things.
Right, you sit down and you get like the full 64 page or 100 page story, and then you just mm-hmm. let it sink in and enjoy it.
I like
though it is deceptive in that way. You get the first book and you're like, oh, this isn't the whole story.
Right. It's like the end of Star Wars or Empire Strikes Back, and you have to wait months. Or actually, in our case, for people that read it for the first time, you're not waiting that long until Volume 2 comes out. Yeah. Thankfully,
I'm lucky for the comicology crowd anyway. Everyone else had to wait.
We're lucky for them.
Right. Unless you're reading the blog and you're seeing one page every week, and they're commenting on each page and have to wait that long.
Yeah. I want to mention though is when Volume 2 comes out on Christmas Eve, which I guess is when this will air, possibly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Volume 1 is going to be free on Comixology for that month, for the month of January, I mean.
That's cool.
Cool.
That's awesome. So you have no reason to grab it then,
and see if they like it before, you know, then they can buy the second one if they like it. So.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Jason Brubaker, pleasure coming on. Anytime you're welcome. I hope people take advantage of, you know, Volume 1, grab it, and then pick up Volume 2. It's gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thank you.